Sri Bhakti Vinanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON founder Charya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adwaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shai Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai. Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai. Gangamai Jamuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale. Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharani. Nirvisesa Sunyavadi Paskachadi Sitarani. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Samsajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. July 28, 2012, in Hawaii, over Skype, reading from text Srimad Bhagavatam, text 1, chapter 18, Maharaj Purikit, cursed by a Brahmin boy, text 22. Yatra Narakta Sasaiva Dira.
Yatra Narakta Sasaiva Dira.
Papo yadeha dishu sangamuram.
Vyapo yadeha dishu sangamuram.
Vrajanti tat paramahamsyam antyam.
Vrajanti tat paramahamsyam antyam.
Yasmin nahim so pasama swadharma.
Yasmin nahim so pasama.
Yatra.
Yatra.
Unto whom?
Unto whom?
Anuraktaha.
Anuraktaha.
Firmly attached.
Firmly attached.
Sahasa.
Sahasa.
All of a sudden.
All of a sudden.
Eva.
Eva.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Diraha.
Diraha.
Self-controlled.
Self-controlled.
Vyapoya.
Vyapoya.
Leaving aside.
Leaving aside.
Deha.
Deha.
The gross body and subtle mind.
The gross body and subtle mind.
Adishu.
Adishu.
Relating to. Sangam.
Sangam.
Attachment.
Attachment.
Udham.
Udham.
Taken to.
Vrajanti.
Vrajanti. Go away.
Go away.
Tat.
Tat.
That.
That.
Paramahamsyam.
Paramahamsa.
The highest stage of perfection.
The highest stage of perfection.
Antyam. And beyond that. Yasmin. In which. Ahimsa. Non-violence. Upashamaha. And renunciation. Swadharmaha. Consequential self-controlled persons who are attached to the Supreme Lord Shri Krishna can all of a sudden give up the world of material attachment, including the gross body and subtle mind, and go away to attain the highest perfection of the renounced order of life, by which nonviolence and renunciation are consequential. Purport. Now, this is it's a short purport, just one paragraph, but there's so much in this purport. It's very deep. Only the self-controlled can gradually be attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Self-controlled means not indulging in sense gratification more than is necessary, and those who are not self-controlled are given over to sense enjoyment. Dry philosophical speculation is the subtle sense enjoyment of the mind. Sense enjoyment leads one to the path of darkness. Those who are self-controlled can make progress on the path of liberation from the conditional life of material existence. The Vedas, therefore, enjoin that one should not go on the path of darkness, but should make a progressive march toward the path of light or liberation. Okay, just one second. Thank you. One second, sorry. Okay. Self-control is actually achieved not by artificially stopping the senses from material enjoyment, but by becoming factually attached to the Supreme Lord, by engaging one's unalloyed senses in the transcendental service of the Lord. The senses cannot be forcibly curbed, but they can be given proper engagement. Purified senses, therefore, are always engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord. This perfectional stage of sense engagement is called bhakti yoga. So those who are attached to the means of bhakti yoga are factually self-controlled and can all of a sudden give up their homely or bodily attachment for the service of the Lord. This is called the Paramahamsa stage. Hamsas or swans accept only milk out of a mixture of milk and water. Similarly, those who accept the service of the Lord instead of Maya's service are called the Paramahamsas. They are naturally qualified with all the good attributes, such as pridelessness, freedom from vanity, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, respectability, worship, devotion, and sincerity. All these godly qualities exist in the devotee of the Lord spontaneously. Such Paramahamsas who are completely given up to the service of the Lord are very rare. They are very rare even amongst the liberated souls. Okay, now Srila Prabhupada is going to describe the meaning of some of the qualities. Real nonviolence means freedom from envy. In this world, everyone is envious of his fellow being. But a perfect Paramahamsa, being completely given up to the service of the Lord, is perfectly non-envious. He loves every living being in relation with the Supreme Lord. Real renunciation is describing nonviolence. Now he's describing renunciation. Real renunciation means perfect dependence on God. Every living being is dependent on someone else because he is so made. Actually, everyone is dependent on the mercy of the Supreme Lord. But when one forgets his relation with the Lord, he becomes dependent on the conditions of material nature. Renunciation means renouncing one's dependence on the conditions of material nature, and thus becoming completely dependent on the mercy of the Lord. Real independence means complete faith in the mercy of the Lord without dependence on the condition of matter. What a sentence. Real independence means complete faith in the mercy of the Lord without dependence on the conditions of matter. This Paramahamsa stage is the highest perfectional stage in bhakti yoga, the process of devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Okay, just give me one second here. Yatran urakta sahasaiva dhira vyapoya deha dishu sangamudam rajanti tat paramaham syamantyam yasmin ahimso pasamasvadharma. Self-controlled persons who are attached to the Supreme Lord can all of a sudden give up the world of material attachment, including the gross body and subtle mind, and go away to attain the highest perfection of the renounced order of life, by which nonviolence and renunciation are consequential. So to become independent of the conditions of matter, to become free, Prabhupada says that the need of the soul is to become free, to be in the free light and the spirit, that this is our need. And all of us are looking for freedom. We want to be free from birth, death, old age, and disease. We're all trying to remain young and vibrant and healthy, to avoid death. We want to be free of the free miseries. We want to be free of the miseries of the body and mind, as it says here in this verse. And to be free of the gross body and subtle mind. We want to be free of miseries from other living entities. Most of us have so many miseries from the body and mind, and so many miseries from other living entities. Even the living entities, not just like mosquitoes and barking dogs, but most of us have miseries even from other living entities who are our friends and family members and co-workers. And miseries from conditions of material nature. Like right now you can probably hear that it's pouring rain. So too hot, too cold, too dry, too wet. What to speak of things like cyclones and hurricanes and earthquakes, etc. So we all want to be free from the dependence on the conditions of matter. So when we're serving Maya, as Prabhupada says here, when we're engaged in the service of Maya or illusion, then we're very dependent on the conditions of matter. You could say that material life is simply a struggle to adjust the conditions of matter in order to try to give us happiness. But just like when you try to find a comfortable place to sleep or a comfortable place to lie down, you can't actually stay in one position forever. You have to adjust your position. So what's comfortable for a while, after a while you have to change. It becomes the same position that was comfortable becomes uncomfortable. And you have to keep shifting. You don't get yourself... I was talking to one woman, and she was saying how, you know, my husband doesn't fix things around the house. And I said, the problem is when you have a house, there's always something to fix around the house. You know, maybe for a week there's nothing to fix, and then something else breaks, and something else needs to be done. So this is just what it's like. So we don't like this dependence. We wish we were free from these conditions of matter. We wish that our happiness, our peace, our satisfaction, our fulfillment was not dependent on our external circumstances. As long as we feel dependent on the conditions of matter, we become a slave. I have to try to adjust this way and that way and this way and that way and this way and that way. And we try to become independent by being the master of Maya. Well, if I could just become the master of Maya, then I could have material nature dependent on me, and then it would do what I want, and then I would be happy. Now, this is our intrinsic disease. I want to become the master of Maya. I want to become Krishna, who's the master of Maya. Shristi stiti pralayasadana shaktireka chayeva yasya bhuvanani vivarti durga ichchanu rupam api yasya chitete sa. Maya is the chaya. She's the shadow, or daivyesha gunamayi mama maya dharati. It's Krishna's energy, but we want to be the master. Maya dakshena prakriti suyate satyarashram hetunanena kunteya jagadvipari vartite. That's Krishna's position. And because we want to be the master of the material energy, we are therefore, as Prabhupada explains here, envious. Because everyone else is also trying to be the master of the material energy. And really everyone, not even just the other human beings, right? Even the little spider. I'll become so expert at weaving a web that, you know, everybody will, all the little insects will become my prey and I will live very happily. Or the trees, you know, I will push beyond the other trees and get the most sunlight. So all the living entities are trying to become the master of Maya. Just like in the animal kingdom and sometimes in the human kingdom, there may be many males fighting over a female. Or in some kinds of animals, many males are fighting over a harem of females, like among the walruses or the lions. But only one can win. Oh, and generally, a woman has only one husband. And sometimes, like with Draupadi or Marisha, and there's certain parts of India even today where a woman has more than one husband. But even when a woman has more than one husband has to be the chief. And you'll see that in societies where women had more than one husband, like I said, this is especially some areas of India where this practice is just now starting to fade. But even in such circumstance, you'll find that almost always the husbands are brothers, and the oldest husband is the chief husband. So it's not possible, right? We are trying all to be the husband of the material energy, the master of the material energy. And we're competing for the spot. Just like if we want to talk about logical understandings for the existence of God, we can understand easily there must be some intelligence behind creation. But then if we say, well, is it a group? Is it a committee? Or is it one? And we'll see that even where there's a committee, there's a chairperson of the committee. There has to be a leader. Without a chair, nothing moves forward. So I've been on committees with a weak or ineffective chair, and nothing happens. Somebody has to take the position of leader. The most unstable form of business organization is a partnership. So now, of course, and people aren't going to like that I say this, sorry, but now in the family life, we want to have equal partnership. And we see, therefore, that it becomes, that family life is one of the several reasons, that family life has become very unstable. So there can only be one master of Maya. There can't be many masters of Maya. I mean, even Jesus said this. How are you going to serve two masters? What are you going to do? You know, if you have two different authorities, just like one time I was in a temple with co-temple presidents. I'm sure Ramananda Prabhu remembers this. And we had, the temple was a historical building. So we were giving historical tours. So we had two temple presidents and two GBCs. So one set of leaders was in charge of the temple aspect and one was in charge of the tour aspect, but they had equal authority. One wasn't under the authority of the other. And there were so many conflicts. So the people in charge of the tour, they wanted us to present the building as a historical building and downplay the Krishna conscious aspect. But the person in charge of the temple, they wanted to use it as a temple. So I remember it was Balaram's appearance day, and a large tour was scheduled. And so the person in charge of the tour was saying that he wanted to have the celebration on another day or another time because he didn't want the tour people to be disturbed at seeing the celebration. And he didn't want the tour people to just be disturbed at seeing all these shaven-headed, you know, dhoti-wearing devotees going back and forth. And so there was a conflict. So it's not possible for there to be many, 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 many equal masters of Maya. Therefore, there's envy. If I'm going to be, first of all, I'm convinced that my happiness is dependent on material conditions. So second of all, I'm convinced that the way to become happy is I have to have the power to adjust material conditions to the way I want. However, only one person can have that power. Therefore, I am envious of all other living entities. And then there's simply, and then it becomes a circle. My envy of all other living entities, my envy of my hatred at material nature that's not under my control, my hatred and envy of the person who is in that position of control causes my dependence on material nature. It cycles. Because I'm envious of the actual master of Maya, therefore I have to be put into illusion. And when I'm put into illusion, I think my happiness is to control material nature, which causes me to be envious of the real controller, which puts me into illusion. So what do I do? How do I get out of this circle? So here it's saying one can do this very quickly. Very quickly. Sahasa, all of a sudden. As soon as one understands the root of the problem and deals with the root of the problem, then immediately the cycle is broken and one becomes free. But why are we hesitant to become free? Well, Srila Prabhupada is describing that real freedom, real independence, means to be dependent on Krishna. So when we condition souls here, we have to become dependent on Krishna. Like Prabhupada says here, those who accept the service of the Lord instead of Maya's service. And we think, well, what difference will that make? Instead of being dependent on Maya, I'll be dependent on the master of Maya. Well, it seems to me that it'll be the same thing. And if I actually declare my dependence on the master of Maya, then what chance do I ever have of becoming the master of Maya myself? So we think, well, I'll still be dependent. I'll still be a servant. I still won't be able to control my situation. And then I'll give up all hope of ever being able to, because I'll no longer be trying to be the master. So therefore, we don't surrender. We're afraid. We think that if Maya is giving us so much trouble, it must be due to the will of the master of Maya. And therefore, the master of Maya must be a cruel person who we have to dethrone and take his place. And we don't want to surrender. This is something like thinking that because my mother and father have put me in the corner, have given me a time out because I've done something wrong, that therefore they are cruel people. And if I surrender to them and if I try to serve them, then I will suffer even more. Or just like a criminal thinking that because the government has imprisoned him, that if he becomes a good citizen of the government, he'll suffer even more than in prison. So from a logical position, we can understand that this sort of thinking is absurd. But from a position of the heart, there's a great reluctance, a great deep reluctance to actually surrender to the service of the Lord. Let's look here a little bit about what this means to surrender to the service of the Lord. So Srila Prabhupada talks about how this is coming from darkness to light. So all of us want to remain in the light. It's interesting that I was told by a woman who worked for the blind that blindness is a disability that engenders a tremendous amount of compassion from people. The people are much more likely to help the blind than they are to help most other kinds of disability. Even though this person was telling me that there are other kinds of disabilities that are much more disabling than blindness. But we have a natural understanding that to be blind, you don't know what to do and where to go. We all want to be able to see. To come to the light means I can understand what I'm doing and the consequences of what I'm doing. Now, therefore, people are interested in the future. In a traditional society, people consulted an astrologer and a palmist. And not too long ago, there were such expert persons, just like the palm reader at the hotel where Sanatan Goswami and Ishan stayed. And this palm reader could understand just by glancing at Sanatan Goswami's hand. It's not that Sanatan Goswami put out his hand for a detailed inspection. You know, today you go to a palm reader, they'll put your hand in a bright light and spread it out and take 10 minutes meditating on it. But this palm reader must have just had a glance, and he was able to say, this man has 8 gold coins with him. Such precision of understanding. And that was only 500 years ago. So people used to go to such persons who understood how to foretell the future, again, by being in the light, by knowing the Shastra. Nowadays, people try to do it in other ways, just like we've put together a seminar for ISKCON leadership called Environmental Scanning. That's not about ecology, but it's about how to get information so that you can predict the future. So people are always interested in knowing what's going to happen, what's going to be the result of my choice. If I go here, if I do this, what will happen? So for that, you need to have light. You need to be able to see. You need to be able to see the path. You need to be able to see the goal at the end of the path. In darkness, how can you ever make decisions that will lead to your happiness? So one who surrenders to Krishna has this light. And one who surrenders to Krishna, Prabhupada talks here because this is one of the main thrusts of the verse, is dhira. They're controlled. Their senses are under control. So again, this is not being dependent on material nature. The conditioned soul, what their senses tell them to do, either they do it or they're really struggling with the senses. Kind of like struggling with a wild animal, it's explained in the Bhagavatam, the mind and the senses. Just like so many people now, I think 1/3 of Americans are grossly overweight. So this means the senses are saying, eat, and the person is not able to say to the senses, no. Right? Or so many children born out of marriage. Now 40% of children in America are born out of marriage. Again, the senses are saying, have sex. And the person is not able to say to the senses, no. They're not able to control their senses. Those are two examples. We can give so many. So wouldn't it be wonderful if we could actually control our senses, get our senses to do what we want them to do? So one who's surrendered to Krishna is able to do that, not by force of will, not by being deprived, but by giving the senses actually satisfying engagement. So one who surrenders to Krishna, they're in the light, they have knowledge, jnana dipena bhasvita. And one who is surrendered to Krishna, their senses are under their control. They can actually live according to their ideals. How lovely. You know, we all have our ideals for ourselves, what kind of person we'd like to be, how we'd like to behave. But our senses and our minds don't often, don't always obey our intentions. What is it? Jiva Buddha Sanatana, Mana Shastra Stindrani, Prakriti Stani Karshati. Karshati is struggling very hard with the 6 senses that include the mind. Such a struggle to say what we would like to just, you know, we'll read some book, take some course, how to deal with other people, and then in the heat of the moment, we do something else, we say something else. So one who actually is dependent on Krishna, they're the master of their senses because their senses are satisfied by proper engagement. And here they can all of a sudden give up any material attachment. a conditioned soul, if they have some attachment that's bad for them that they want to give up, sometimes it's a struggle. They give it up, go back to it, give it up, go back to it. Then they give up some bad habit for months or years. And then again, they're doing it again. Oh, I thought you weren't playing video games anymore. Oh, I went back to it. So one who is dependent on Krishna, if something is harmful, they can easily and immediately give it up without any difficulty. It's compared in the Bhagavatam that Maharaj Bharat, he could give up his material attachments just like after we evacuate, after we have a bowel movement. We walk away. We don't look into the toilet and say, oh, this was part of my body. We just walk away. We have no attachment. So one who's dependent on Krishna can also do that. And then naturally, Prabhupada says you're spontaneously having good attributes, like pridelessness. So how much trouble does our pride give us? It puts us into such conflict with others, pushes us to do foolish things. Non-violence, that we don't cause any pain to anyone, not even on the mental platform. We have no desire to cause any pain to anyone. Tolerance. So again, you know, we'd like to be able to be tolerant. When we're in conditioned life, it's so difficult to be tolerant because we're thinking we're dependent on our conditions or our happiness. One who's surrendered to Krishna, they're actually able to tolerate everything. Why? Because their happiness is coming from within. Simplicity. So how many times do we think, oh, my life's become too complicated? Sometimes when I stay at devotees' homes, their houses are filled up with so much stuff that there's not a clean and clear surface anywhere in the house. Yeah. And I think about, maybe this is a little strange, but I think about, you know, when you die, how much trouble your children are going to have going through all of your stuff. How many truckloads of junk are going to have to be carted away? You know, sometimes the relatives take 1 year to go through all of the junk. So simple life, just what we need. Simplicity, respectability, how interesting. Of course, this is from the conversation of Ramananda Roy and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that the Vaishnava is the most respectable. The Vaishnava has the most fame. Interesting, because we learn from Bhaktivinoda Thakur that this desire for fame is the root of material life. But yet, one who becomes dependent on Krishna, they become actually respectable. And good attributes such as worship and devotion and sincerity. Now again, who would not like to have these qualities naturally there? And to give up all feelings of envy, to love every living being in relation to the Supreme Lord. To actually be able to have a genuine connection of love with everyone, without ever being able to be hurt by anyone. So this is what will happen to someone who's dependent on Krishna. And such a person is called a Paramahamsa. Like a great swan who has a mystic power to take the essence of things. So how to come to this platform? So we have several clues here in this purport. I'm going to focus on two of them. One here at the end of the purport: complete faith in the mercy of the Lord without dependence on the conditions of matter. So it was really nice. Just a little while ago, I was talking to one woman who's having difficulty in her marriage, and she was saying, I want to see that everything that's happening is the will of the Lord. When one sees that everything that's happening is the will of the Lord, then everything that's happening can be a cause for happiness. Now, many of us find it helpful to think of the Lord as the boss in our business. that we're an employee in the Lord's business. Of course, his business is selling love of God. Nice business. And your boss can give you a plan and they can change the plan. The boss can say, okay, I want you to do this and this and this. And then they can call you to the office and say, oh, now I decided I want to do this and this and this. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, difficulties encountered in the service of the Lord are his pleasure. Now, yesterday we had so many people over here, so many kids and adults and so much cooking. So the kitchen was a catastrophe. And we have assigned roles, assigned jobs. So one of the older children was assigned to clean the kitchen. But one of the other children voluntarily went to help. So they were cleaning together. It was a lot of hard work. And not particularly materially pleasant work. You know, a really dirty kitchen, lots of dirty pots, lots of dirty plates, and because of so many people, there wasn't really enough room to put things, so things weren't really put in logical places. And it's one of those things you look at and you just feel overwhelmed. When they were done, they came to see me, and they said, oh, come see what we did, Grandma. They got such pleasure from their sacrifice. So that's a very simple example. Actually, those who study human motivation say that one of the main sources of happiness in what a person does is a feeling of mastery and challenge. That one is doing something that's challenging. That there's some sacrifice. So to see everything as the mercy of the Lord, to have complete faith in the mercy of the Lord, that when the mercy of the Lord involves some sacrifice on my part, I delight in it. Of course, it's easy to delight in the mercy of the Lord, you know, if you get $1 million, etc. But to delight in the mercy of the Lord even when things are difficult, to have that complete, as Prabhupada says here, complete faith. Krishna is always merciful to me. Everything that's happening to me is Krishna's mercy to me, without dependence on the conditions of matter. So whatever conditions I'm in, wealth or poverty, sickness or health, fame or infamy, I depend on the mercy of the Lord. I'm not dependent on auspicious or inauspicious circumstances. As Prabhupada says, a good business person, they can make money when the market's going up, and they can make money when the market's going down. We know one business person that as soon as sales went down in his company, he would cut all the spending. Instead of thinking, okay, if sales are down, then maybe I need to spend a little more to get the sales back up. Or I've been told that people who buy and sell stocks, most people tend to buy when the stocks are high, thinking, oh, this company's worth a lot of money. And then when the stock goes down, they sell, thinking, uh-oh, I better get rid of my stock. But an astute business person understands how to make money when things are going down and how to make money when things are going up. Prabhupada tells the story of one Indian businessman who, by finding a dead rat, from that dead rat, built a whole business empire. So the devotee also, they know how to be happy in Krishna consciousness when things are going down, and they know how to be happy in Krishna consciousness when things are going up. And the other clue here that's given as to how to attain this state of freedom from dependence on Maya is to use our senses in the service of the Lord. Now, we are very fortunate because this is a very easy thing to do. Maybe having complete faith in the mercy of the Lord is a little difficult for most of us. But using our senses in Krishna's service is extremely easy. Especially since we're followers of the Lord in the mood of Mahaprabhu, whose mission is preaching. And we're in Kali Yuga. There's a lot of preaching to do. There's unlimited. Prabhupada says Krishna consciousness is not narrow or stereotyped. There's unlimited service to do, to preach Krishna consciousness, that can be done in all kinds of creative and innovative and challenging ways. So there is interesting and challenging work to do for everyone that can engage our senses. There's so much beauty to see. I remember my father, when he would visit the temple, he was always astonished at the beauty of the deities and the decorations on the altar. He was always amazed that we used real flowers. Of course, in some temples I go to now, they use fake flowers. But anyway, I remember my father always amazed. You know, in India, it's commonplace. There'll be a festival in India, and people will create temporary walls out of flowers. And there'll be just such a profusion of flowers, or like the flower festival in January in Chaupati, when, you know, 2,000 people in a room with 6 inches of flowers on the floor at the end of the festival. But such beauty. The beauty of the Lord, the beauty of the decorations and the dress and the flowers of the Lord, the beauty of the temples, the beauty of the property, the wonderful sounds of the kirtan. Last night my neighbors were having a party. But we can have a party every day, many times a day, with our kirtan, our prasadam, the beautiful deities. And Prabhupada talks about here about sense enjoyment of the mind. He says dry philosophical speculation is subtle sense enjoyment of the mind. But Prabhupada tells us we must engage in philosophical speculation, but not dry, but tasty. So we also have an enjoyment for the mind. And as Prabhupada says, discussing these shastras threadbare, chusyanticha ramanticha, the devotees get great satisfaction and bliss even on the platform of the mind. So to engage our senses and mind in Krishna's service, that is very, very, very easy. And if we do that, then everything else will come. Then this sense of complete dependence, complete faith in the mercy of the Lord, all these good qualities, being in light, being able to give up our material attachment, all these things will come. As Prabhupada says, spontaneously. So we are so fortunate that we understand the root of our problem. Someone in materialistic consciousness, they don't understand the essential root. They're just looking at symptoms, and they're seeing the wrong cause of their symptoms. So we see the root, we see how to get out of it, and it's a very, very simple process. Kevalanandakanda. That's blissful even from the beginning. We do not have an idea that you suffer, 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 and then later you will enjoy the fruits of Krishna consciousness. Although certainly until Nishtha Prabhupada says it's a hard struggle. But there's happiness, there's even ananda, even in the very beginning. So questions, comments, corrections, additions, subtractions.
Uh-huh. Oh, good, good, good. Okay. We're almost there. Just 1 second. Okay, so I released everybody.
Your conference recording has stopped.
Somehow, Ramananda, the volume isn't as loud as when of you guys. You're much quieter, even though I have my volume turned all the way up. You're much quieter than when I call in on free conferencing or Skype. I don't know why.
Okay.
I'm not sure if that's something that you can adjust or... Oh, or maybe...
Well, I'll try and be quiet. If there's any questions or comments that you would like to ask Mother Ermailer, please go ahead.
I have a
my
question.
My microphone working. Yes, your microphone is working fine. There's someone else also talking.
Okay, I was going to ask a question. Mother Ermailer, we talked a lot about seeing Krishna's mercy.
You're going to need to talk quite a bit louder because somehow I'm using this new thing to get on, and you're just... I have all my things turned up all the way, and it's still really quiet.
Okay, can you hear me? Can you hear me now a little better?
Little.
Okay. Well,
speak as loud as I can. You spoke a lot about how Krishna, when Krishna puts us in the difficult situations, we can at least relatively understand that this is a blessing and it will help us to become detached from material nature. But what about when Krishna puts us in a situation like, let's say we're heading to an important speaking engagement and we're driving and the car gets rear-ended and we're not going to make it to that engagement. The police are there, you've got to deal with this crash car, and many people are there waiting to hear you speak. How do we see this situation like that, that this is Krishna's arrangement?
There's a really nice letter from Prabhupada Jayapataka Swami that he said that we see whatever is meant to do, that is what I am doing. So we have some business that needs to be taken care of with the crash car, and we weren't meant to go speak to those people. I really like what Prabhupada says in that letter. Whatever is meant to be, that is what I am doing. Tell you a little story where there was some mix-up, and the person driving me to the airport was driving me an hour later than I needed to go. And we got stuck in traffic. We ended up at a traffic jam, and we were calling the airline, and they said, you know, if you miss the flight, you're going to have to rebuy the ticket, and someone else had paid for the ticket, and it was just... You know, it was a lot of anxiety, and then we tried taking a detour, which made us even later. And I was just praying to Krishna, I know this has some purpose. I know this has some purpose. I know this has some purpose. You know, I know there's some good in here. I just don't understand what it is. We ended up getting to the airport literally 2 minutes before they would let me get on. And those are the days I traveled with check-in bags. They check in my bag, and I got on. When I arrived in London, my bag was immediately on the carousel. I took it and I left. Many, many, many months later, when I was back in America, I got a letter from the airline apologizing for the problems with the baggage and offering me a large number of free miles. And I called them and I said, I didn't have any trouble with the baggage. And they said, no, everyone on that flight, the baggage drawer wouldn't open, and we had to bring the plane back to America to have our mechanics work on it, and it was many days before they get their baggage. I said, I got my baggage right away. I said, you know, you don't need to give me these miles. And they said, oh, we've already given them to you. You might as well take them. So I realized that because I was so late, my bag was put in a separate place, and I ended up getting a free ticket to India. So I see that there's always some purpose, you know, or sometimes the person who comes to fix your car, the guy who brings the tow truck to fix your car, that was really the person you were supposed to preach to. Maybe you weren't really supposed to preach to the guys at the other place. And because you didn't show up at the other place, maybe the devotees who were waiting for you to show up at the other place, maybe they had to give the class, and maybe they were the ones meant to give the class. Like one time Bhaktivinoda Thakur was sick and Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati had to preach in his stead. You know, so this Krishna has his plans, and having that trust that whatever's meant to be, that's what I'm doing, and I'm a servant. I remember another time when I was going to buy room dividers for our school. So I made a lot of inquiries and I was asking people, do you have, you know, top condition used room dividers, all the same color and style, a certain height, so forth and so on. So two places told me they had them. One place was very far away. When I went to the place that was very far away, it turned out they didn't have what I wanted at all. And I said, but you told me you had it. And he said, no, I never told you I had it. And then the guy saw me, and actually it was one of those rare times that I wasn't in a sari. But he looked at me, I don't know, seeing my neck beads or whatever, and he said, are you with the Hare Krishnas? And I said, yeah. He said, you know, I got one of your books 10 years ago, and I've been just rereading it, and I've been praying and praying. I want to find these people again. Because I went there, and first I said, Krishna, what did you bring me here for? Wasted my time, you know, hours out of my way to go to a place where they don't have what I want. I could have been going to the right place. But actually, it was the right place. Radhana Swami tells the story of how his flight was delayed and he missed giving a preaching engagement. Very much like what you're talking about. The flight was delayed. And he was supposed to fly someplace where hundreds or maybe thousands of people were waiting to hear him speak. Instead, he ended up in a conversation with a woman who was also waiting for the plane, who had gone through some terrible situations in her life. And she herself was diagnosed with cancer, and she had to make that particular flight in order to get to a treatment center and so forth and so on. And he writes about the story, how her whole life changed by his preaching. And it's really funny, at the end of their conversation, she was saying, you know, where are you going? And he told her where he was going, and she said, you know, how many people come to your lectures? And he told her, and she said, it must be difficult for people to have some personal time with you. And he laughed, and he said, well, yeah, it's a fact. She said, I'm getting to talk to you for 4 hours. I mean, I know some of Radhana Swami's disciples who've never talked to him even for 4 minutes. So that was where he was meant to be. You know, and it's hard to say what's more important, the one person or the 100 persons, or the one person or the 20 person. Or maybe it's just that there's some important lesson for me. Maybe there's something that I need to learn or something that I need to understand for which I'm going through this particular experience. And maybe what I need to learn and what I need to understand is a lot more important than anything I can have to teach others.
Krishna's
saving us. So, you know, I've had this experience over and over and over again, and that if I look in hindsight, I'm always exactly where I'm supposed to be, doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing, as long as I'm following the instructions of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. As long as I'm in the company employ, as long as I'm following Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, then my boss will always put me in exactly the right place to accomplish his business, even though it may not be at all clear to me at the time, you know, what I'm doing here. I mean, one nice example from the Shastra is when Arjuna was in heaven and got cursed by Urvasi. So, you know, it wasn't exactly a very nice curse, especially for a Kshatriya, but it ended up serving him very well. So we may think, you know, we may think even I'm in a situation where I can't do Krishna's business. But instead we just think, how can I do Krishna's business in the situation where I am? All right, here's the situation I am. No, the materialists are constantly thinking, like we were saying today, to adjust the conditions of material nature. So the materialists are constantly thinking, let me adjust my external situation to facilitate the execution of my business. And in Krishna consciousness, we can also think like that. We can put most of our energy into, let me adjust my external situation so that I can do the best service for Krishna. And certainly we should give some attention to that. I mean, you want to actually set up an altar in your house and wake up early so you have a nice time to chant. And, you know, we make some effort to do that. But really, you know, we're not in control of those things, if you haven't noticed. And therefore, why not try to do my master's business in the situation that I'm in? You know, make some effort, yes, but accept that whatever situation that I'm in is designed by my boss. Let me sell love of God here. You know, I thought that I was supposed to go there to sell love of God. Let me sell love of God here. And if there's no one around, let me at least sell it to myself. Oh, for 1 second, let me.
Hare Krishna. I wanted to ask a question, if that's okay.
Of course.
You know, is there a difference between humility and pridelessness? And how do we get rid of prideless? How do we get to the point of pridelessness?
Okay, well, having my computer in front of me, we can easily look up humility and pridelessness, one of the benefits of modern technology. Let's look this up. pridelessness. All right, and here we go. In chapter 13, process of knowledge, first two words are humility and pridelessness. So here Srila Prabhupada defines humility as being free from the desire to be honored by others, and pridelessness as not being proud of being a religious or spiritual person, not thinking I'm better than others because I am religious, I'm following something. Prabhupada says here, okay, I'll read it exactly. Humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. And then in terms of pridelessness, he says, people are very anxious to be famous for their religion, and consequently sometimes it is found that without understanding the principles of religion, one enters into some group which is not actually following religious principles and then wants to advertise himself as a religious mentor. So that's how I see Srila Prabhupada's describing that pride is pride that, oh, I'm so Krishna conscious, I'm so religious, I'm so pious, I'm better than other people, I'm superior to them. And humility is not wanting the satisfaction, he says, not being anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. Certainly there's satisfaction of being honored by others, but not being anxious for that satisfaction. Now he asks, how can we develop that? Well, I really like Prabhupada's explanation. Let's look at humility. I really like Prabhupada's explanation of Akura going to Vrindavan, where he says Akura is going to Vrindavan and he's thinking that Krishna will call me Uncle Akura and then my whole life will become glorious. Let's see if I can again use my trusty computer and look this up specifically. And I can read exactly what Prabhupada says because it's very wonderful. Okay. He says, Krishna and Balaram will call me Akura uncle, and at that time my whole life will be glorious. Unless one is recognized by the Supreme Personality of God, and his life cannot be successful. That's Akura talking. Then Prabhupada says, it is clearly stated here that one should try to be recognized by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by one's service and devotion, without which the human form of life is condemned. So this desire to be honored by others, we should change to, I want to be honored by Krishna. I want to be recognized by Krishna by my service. And you know, if you're recognized by the queen, it doesn't matter whether you're recognized by the trash collector. It's just irrelevant. You know, so if you're recognized by Krishna, then you lose being anxious for the satisfaction of being honored by others. You're not anxious about it. Because you've already got Krishna's honor. You've already got Krishna's recognition. So therefore, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, one should work in such a way that God wants to see you. How to give up pridelessness? What are we? You know, are we really that great in our following? Are we really that advanced and that elevated? And if we are, it's by mercy. It's not, you know, Krishna can put up some demonstration of Maya that would bewilder us if he wanted to. The pure devotees, they don't fall because Krishna protects them. So it's only Krishna's protection. It's not just my own strength. It's just like if a child is dependent on the parent protects them. You know, for the little child, the child parent protects them whether the child wants it or not. But for the grown-up child, when you have grown-up children, you're only going to protect them and guide them if they want it. So for those who are elevated, they're protected and guided by the Lord. And without that protection and guidance by the Lord, who are we? We're nothing. How can we be prideful? Another way to get rid of this pride is just, especially for other devotees who are on the path, having pride is as silly as somebody who's in sixth grade being proud of being more advanced than someone who's third grade. It's just a matter of time. And because the whole material world only exists for a breath of Mahavishnu, so if somebody's not quite as far on the spiritual path as I am, so what? I was there before, and they'll be where I am now. And because it's all just a moment in time, that's really irrelevant. Why be proud of that? And who knows? It may be like the rabbit and the turtle. Maybe I'm ahead of them now, and maybe they'll be ahead of me later. You know, that happens. You know? Or maybe they're already more advanced than I am, and I just don't see it. Or maybe they're more advanced than me in some areas. So maybe I'm more advanced than in one way, and maybe I'm less advanced than them in another way. I mean, even people who are not devotees, we can see that they may have some good qualities that we lack. We may think, you know, just see how hard they're working for illusion. I know many non-devotees who are a lot more devoted to earning money than I am to Krishna. So, you know, what is there to be proud about? So just by a little reflection. Okay, anybody else?
Thank you, Mother Urmila.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mother
Prabhupada.